Welcome, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Take us everywhere, wherever you're going for the holidays. Got to talk to that crazy uncle. You can always rely on Civic Media to bring you back down to earth. And frankly, probably give you some good counterpoints when he's going off on some crazy bananas stuff that he heard on faux news over the weekend. And here's the great thing. I might be sitting at a tiny little studio off of Brady Street and Astor, which I love, the liberal heart of Milwaukee. But you can hear me statewide, no matter where you are in Wisconsin, both on the app and across the entire Civic Media Radio Network. So hello, Wisconsin. It's great to be with you on this very cold Monday. I'm really excited. I'm going to have judicial candidate Rochelle Johnson-Bent joining me this hour. She is running first-time candidate for office, first-time judicial candidate. Really excited to have Ms. Johnson-Bent joining me. She is running for Milwaukee County Circuit Court, and she's done some incredibly interesting things in her legal career. Native Milwaukee, and we're going to talk about them this hour. Tomorrow, we're going to check in with our friend Al Petrelli of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Boy, we had a great conversation with him just a little bit over a month and a half ago as TSO was looking to kick off their winter concert tour, which they did in the state of Wisconsin. But don't worry if you missed them when they kicked off their tour. They are coming back, and you'll be able to catch TSO again. On Wednesday, I'm going to be joined by Molly Dubin, the curator at the Milwaukee Jewish Museum. So appropriate and just in time to round out your Hanukkah holiday celebrations. Most wonderful. And next Monday, everybody, I'm going to be joined by the executive director of the Ability Center, Damian Buckman, celebrating their new all-access park located just outside the Milwaukee County Zoo. What fun. And if that wasn't enough for you, don't worry, Civic Media is also carrying all of your favorite sports teams somewhere on our network. Another great reason to go get the app. You want to listen to the Bucks tonight? They're going to be on Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM 98.3 FM. They're going to be on News from the Center, Richland Center. We also have the Packers Giants tonight going live also on Richland Center. What great fun. Wednesday, we'll have the Bucks on Oshkosh Air Support out in Amory and Racine, Park Falls. Again, all of this you can find on the Civic Media app, and the fun continues. Great coverage of Badger basketball, Bucks, and the Packers all throughout the holiday season. You can get it all on the Civic Media app. But I want to start with where I left off in part last week, which was on Thursday, reporting that a state court in Texas had basically granted a temporary restraining order preventing the state of Texas from enforcing its criminal penalties for healthcare providers that help women make the best care healthcare choices for themselves and their family. The woman at the center of this legal case is a lady by the name of Kate Cox. She's 31, married, has two kids, wants to have a whole bunch more, but she has a pregnancy that is going to end in some kind of tragedy. Either her fetus will die in utero, or if ultimately forced to carry this pregnancy to term, her child would suffer a frankly, what most medical experts think is pretty indisputable, a painful and short life and die. In other words, the fetus is non-viable. And if forced to carry this pregnancy to term, Ms. Cox, who again wants to have a large family with her husband, may very well lose her ability to have children. Texas abortion law, there's currently a case going on separate from Ms. Cox in Texas where folks have sued because the exceptions under Texas's abortion restrictions are so vague as to make them inapplicable. In other words, medical providers have no idea what the words in the law mean, so they won't help anybody, including Ms. Cox, get an abortion. So there's been a lot of activity in this case since we last spoke last Thursday. specifically on Friday. Well, let me back up a little bit. On Thursday, nearly immediately after the state trial court issued that TRO preventing the state of Texas from enforcing their draconian, would be the only word I can think of, abortion restrictions, putting Ms. Cox's continued fertility at risk, and frankly, potentially forcing her current unborn child and fetus to face certain death and pain if forced to bring the pregnancy to term. Within hours, Attorney General Ken Paxton filed an appeal to the Texas Supreme Court, asking the Supreme Court of Texas to step in and stay that Texas trial court's order. And the Texas Supreme Court did so without explanation. And then there was additional pleadings that Mr. Paxton engaged in. Some briefing before the Supreme Court, some of the arguments I'm going to share with you today, pretty shocking, because what it shows is an absolute, utter, blatant disregard for Ms. Cox's continued fertility. Now, just within hours of coming on the show, Mother Jones reporting that Ms. Cox has left the state of Texas, literally whereabouts unknown, so that she can seek an abortion without the threat of criminalization of her doctor's assistance. Doctors in Texas face up to 99 years in prison. I'll say that again, 99 years in prison for assisting with an abortion. Mother Jones reporting that Ms. Cox said this: "I do not want to put my body through the risks of continuing this pregnancy. I do not want to continue until my baby dies in my belly, or I have to deliver a stillborn baby, or one where life will be measured in hours or days." The Center for Reproductive Rights, who has provided Ms. Cox with legal assistance, had this to say about her leaving the state of Texas. Ms. Cox desperately wanted to be able to get care where she lives and recover at home, surrounded by family. While Kate had the ability to leave the state, most people do not. And a situation like this could be a death sentence. Let me be very clear here. Rich women have always had access to safe abortion. Rich women have always had access to safe abortion. Women in domestic violence situations, poor women, young women, women who can't take time off from their work. These are the women that are punished by a state's decision to rob women of the same free choice that men enjoy in every aspect of their health care. The Center for Reproductive Rights went on: "This past week of legal limbo has been hellish for Kate. Her health is on the line. She has been in and out of the emergency room, and she couldn't wait any longer. Last reporting I saw, Ms. Cox had, in fact, had to go to an emergency room within hours of her original petition being filed because she was having discharge and bleeding." This is the callousness of these sorts of laws. Angie from Monroe asking us via text line, "Since Ms. Cox left the state of Texas, will they go after her when she returns?" I certainly would hope not, but the cravenness of Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, simply knows no bounds. He also has no shame, folks. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. But as I read the Texas law, they certainly would have no legal basis to try to go after Ms. Cox or her healthcare providers should she receive an abortion outside of the state of Texas. But let's talk a minute about Ken Paxton, this attorney general. If you haven't been watching Texas state politics with a whole lot of detail orientation, let me remind you, because you may have heard this guy's name. And it's because the Republican-controlled Texas House of Representatives impeached Mr. Paxton. If you're looking at your radio going, wait, Republicans in the state of Texas impeached a Republican attorney general? Sure did. Now, the Texas Senate acquitted him of all charges on which he was impeached. But let's let's find out more about this guy, Ken Paxton, who thinks that he, and mostly male, mostly conservative, mostly Christian legislators in the state of Texas should tell Ms. Cox to risk her life every day to carry a pregnancy to term and potentially force her unborn fetus to endure a painful life of some hours or maybe days. Yeah, so he was impeached. What was he impeached for? Like grotesque abuse of his office for basically taking donations from his buddy, a guy by the name of Nate Paul, a real estate investor. And he used his office to effectively protect Mr. Paul. It got so bad that a number of Mr. Paxton's own deputies within the Attorney General's office complained to the FBI. Now, listen, any one of us that runs an office for any period of time will have an employer or two that takes issue with the way we run the office or management style or whatever it is. But this was of a different type and sort. This wasn't, I don't like the way Ken manages, he's whatever. This was, he's abusing the power of his office to benefit a donor. And it was a number of deputies. So that's what led to his impeachment, again, acquitted earlier this year. Oh, but that does not end Mr. Paxton's legal woes. He's currently facing a state securities fraud trial this coming spring. That's Mr. Paxton. What did he do? Well, all manner of securities fraud, but let me just pick out one of my favorites. He started telling people to buy securities and advise them about buying securities before he was registered to do so, which is a big no-no, which lawyers actually understand pretty well. When I come back, I'm going to tell you more about Mr. Paxton. You're not going to want to miss this because the guy knows no shame, everybody. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to my producer, Anya Esther, for being here with me. And my thanks to my guest that's going to be joining me at the bottom of the hour, Milwaukee County Circuit Court candidate, Rochelle Johnson-Bent. Not going to want to miss that. We'll introduce the Civic Media universe to Ms. Johnson-Bent and vice versa. So important that we get fresh blood on the bench. I can't tell you, there are some old duffers on there. More on that in a minute. But let's return to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. Yeah, this guy. So, yeah, he went about soliciting securities investment clients without being licensed, paid a fine for that. But it got worse. He's now been indicted by a Texas state grand jury on 3 felony counts of securities fraud. So this is well beyond just, well, I started selling securities before I was technically licensed. He's facing up to 99 years in prison. Certain symmetry there, isn't there? Oh, healthcare providers that help women have free choice about their health care, just like men have in all aspects of men's health care.
Do you know who else is facing 99 years in Texas right now?
Boom.
A groom who threw a $53 million wedding. Then also, I'm not kidding about this, he got in some sort of argument with a cop and fired a gun at a cop. And that also carries a potential maximum sentence of 99 years. All of these things cost 99 years to do in Texas. You can either shoot at a cop. What was the thing you were just saying that's 99 years?
Securities fraud.
Securities fraud. Or you can get or give an abortion. Those are the 3 things. They all cost 99 years in jail in Texas. Isn't that interesting?
It makes you wonder, like, how is Texas deciding on these criminal penalties? $53 million wedding?
He's weird. He's a whole other story. But I think they just roll a 100-sided dice and choose that way. I think that's how they're doing it.
Just in case you've lost track, Ann Richards, a woman and a Democrat used to be the governor of Texas. I just, that was actually, Texas used to be a blue state. I've digressed. Okay, Ken Paxton, 3 felony counts of securities fraud. You might be asking, well, is it like a technical thing? No. He was selling shares of a tech company to people without telling people that the tech company was paying him to do so. It's like the first thing they teach you if you want to become an investment advisor or a securities trader or a lawyer is do not engage in conflict of interest things without disclosure. And even then, just try not to do that because it's generally not very good. And Ken Paxton spoke on January 6th in Washington, D.C. He's the one that asked the Supreme Court to overturn the election. Yes, it's this Attorney General, Ken Paxton. And if that wasn't enough for all of you, Mr. Quote, family values, Mr. Dear Miss Kate Cox, I don't care if you can never have children again because we have a criminal penalty for healthcare providers that allow women to exercise the free choice about their own healthcare that all men enjoy and all aspects of men's healthcare. Yeah, that family values guy. Yeah, he cheated on his wife. It's documented in the press. And who did he cheat on his wife with? An employee of Nate Paul, the guy that gave him the donations, whom he then did favors for as Attorney General that led to his impeachment. This is the Attorney General, Ken Paxton. I mean, you can't make it up. It's sort of like the Moms for Liberty gal and her hubby in Florida in the threesome, and now the husband has been credibly accused of rape. I mean, anytime anybody freaks out about my private life, my body, what I do in my bedroom, whom I do it with, I'm always like, what are you projecting onto me? What's so deeply troubling? By the way, you know, in the spirit of the holiday, I'll be covering some of the hypocrisy related to sexuality, sexual mores, et cetera, that is just rampant in the GOP. That'll be next week, you know, right as we all roll into the last bit of the new year. Here's what was partially just so extraordinary about the filings that Ken Paxton made in response to the Texas trial court ruling. He basically issued an open letter to all healthcare providers that said, I don't care what that trial court in Texas said. If you give Ms. Cox an abortion, I will prosecute you to the full extent of the law. So though he swore an oath to the Texas Constitution and is supposed to be the person that upholds Texas laws, including even decisions from courts that he may not personally agree with, in the wake of that court's decision that the abortion that Ms. Cox has been seeking does fit within the very vague, I would say, void for vagueness, exceptions under the Texas abortion ban statute, he went out and said, no, I'm not going to abide by that. And then he filed his request to the Texas Supreme Court to, again, prevent Ms. Cox from seeking abortion, and now she's had to flee the state of Texas. Here's how her lawyers responded to Attorney General Paxton's filing. The Attorney General's petition is stunning in its disregard for Ms. Cox's life, fertility, and the rule of law. Her current non-viable the state claims that it alone has the power to value Ms. Cox's current non-viable pregnancy more highly than Ms. Cox's own life and the life of the future children she and her husband hope to have, regardless of Ms. Cox's wishes for her family and the good faith advice of her medical team. We ask this court to remind the Attorney General that he does not exist outside the systems of laws of which he is an officer, and that he must follow court orders just like the citizens he purports to serve. Indeed. And I just want to emphasize, in case any of us are missing the point here, that her need for the abortion is immediate. The choice is stark. And again, the Texas legislature made a choice not to clearly define what medical exceptions would apply to their draconian 6-week abortion ban. Shame on them, and shame on Attorney General Paxton. When I come back, I'm going to be joined by Ms. Rochelle Johnson-Bent, candidate for Milwaukee County Circuit Court. So excited to have this conversation. Keep it locked, everybody, and join the conversation. Text or call 844-967-2789.
UK. I was petrified, kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong, and I learned.
A little Gloria Gaynor to come back from the break. We will survive, but we will do it better with my new friend, Rochelle Johnson-Bent, on the Milwaukee County Circuit Court bench. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you would like to ask Ms. Johnson-Bent a question, give us a text. Let Anya know what it is. 844-967-2789. May I call you Rochelle?
Yes, please.
Okay. Yeah. we're going to have a little chit-chat this afternoon. I'm so excited to have you. You are a native Milwaukeean.
Yes.
What made you decide to run for a judgeship?
Yeah. Thank you. First off, thank you for having me here.
Oh my goodness,
I really
happy to.
Appreciate you doing that. Well, being born and raised here in Milwaukee and practicing law now for over 13 years, I have been in and out of our court system, not only for my own personal things, but for family members, as well as an attorney. And I know and understand some of the issues that a lot of our citizens deal with. And I wanted a judge to be in this place who understands those things. And so what better person than myself, who, one, is compassionate and cares about our community, from our community, and knows what it takes to be a good judge in our community. So that's part of it.
And Rochelle, you are not kidding when you say you have touched all kinds of different sorts of law and legal practice. You currently work for Milwaukee Public Schools. You've worked for the Boys and Girls Club, as well as Legal Aid Society. I just had Colleen Foley on last week. Tell us a little bit about your experience doing these different things, because I'll tell you, some folk follow the money. Yes. You clearly followed a commitment to community. It pops off of your resume when I read it. I was like, oh, this lady knows what's up.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad that that's what it is. Just practicing law, I knew early on that I had to love what I was doing in order to want to keep doing it every single day. And so while money is important, yes, I mean, I have bills to pay and I have kids. Yep. I wanted to be passionate about what I was doing. So in the areas that I have worked in, I worked at private practice at a small law firm where I did criminal, family, civil restraining orders. And I loved working with people like every day. And I liked hearing their stories and connected to people. And then what I also liked at that time is I was practicing in mostly in Milwaukee, but also southeastern Wisconsin. So I was able to see other courts and how they were doing things.
Yep.
And then I moved on to Legal Aid Society, where that was probably, like, to this day, one of my favorite jobs, just because I was a guardian ad litem. So I was a supervising attorney, and I not only got the chance to work for the best interest of minor children, I got to talk to those kids and bring their voices to the courts. And I made them feel empowered in a system that sometimes makes them feel like they have no voice.
Now, for folk that don't know, explain what does a guardian ad litem or a GAL do?
That's a great question because a lot of people don't understand. So the a guardian ad litem represents the legal best interest of either an incompetent adult who needs, like, they have a mental capacity that doesn't allow them to represent themselves. So they appoint an attorney that represents and helps them advocate for their best interests. Otherwise, a guardian ad litem is appointed for minor children in family cases as well as children's court. So the division I worked for was the family court division in downtown Milwaukee, which is a court-appointed law or nonprofit organization that gets predominantly all the indigent cases for the minor children and family law cases. So what we do is we advocate for their legal best interest, which does not mean we advocate just for what the wishes are of the children.
Right.
Because a lot of people think that a guardian ad litem just does whatever the children say. It's not, that's not the case, especially when you have siblings. They all have different opinions and interests. So we represent their legal best interest by looking at a number of factors as it relates to whatever the matter is before the court. So custody, placement, whether usually the main issues, but there could be in children's court termination of parental rights. There can be guardianship. So there's lots of issues that deal with children.
It's an incredibly important role within our legal system, and one that many, many people are entirely unfamiliar about. And it sits in this very unique place. A GAL may in fact be sort of in the middle of, as you put it, a custody battle between two parents, and the court, while either parent is being potentially represented by lawyers, the court wants someone to talk to the child and have some idea about the child's perspective, as well as a third party independent legal expert, a lawyer, saying what they believe is in the child's best interest.
Exactly.
On behalf of all of us. And I don't care whether you've never heard about a GAL or not. The work that GALs do benefit our entire community. It's so essential. So on behalf of all of us, thank you for that work. You moved on to work in compliance for the Boys and Girls Club. Tell me what that's like.
Yeah.
How'd you end up at MPS?
That's kind of a transition there. So I switched over to me, it's kind of like a flip. Working in litigation, going to court every day, working with children directly, to going to compliance and contracts, which is kind of different. You're not, it's more transactional law.
Yep.
But the thing is, I wanted to still work with kids. I wanted to still advocate for the needs of our children. So that's what brought me to Boys and Girls Club. Being the director of compliance, I helped set up their whistleblowing and compliance department, as well as their contract process. Because at that time, while there were a lot of contracts in place, especially on the higher level, there wasn't so many of the contracts in place for the everyday contracts between a vendor and the each individual club.
Some of the smaller stuff that they do. And whistleblowing, we've talked about it on my show. I don't care what level of business or government you're at, protecting whistleblowers and having whistleblower processes, protections, so essential. And most recently, you've been working at MPS. Tell us a little bit about that.
So that kind of transitioned me to MPS because I was at Boys and Girls Club and I was doing the contracts. And I guess I was giving them a little hard time, as they put. They were saying, we'd rather have you on our side of things. So when they had an opening in their contract law specialist department, a few of them kind of nudged me and was like, you think you should apply? And so I was like, oh, well, you know, let's see. And so, yeah, I came over to Milwaukee Public Schools. I absolutely love it. I have a wonderful team. I'm the manager and managing attorney over the procurement and risk management and contract law specialist. So I get to see all the contracts again, as well as I deal with the workers' comp, risk management assessments, and we're trying to figure out how to keep our kids safe, our staff safe. Those assessments are coming through me in terms of reviewing that and then presenting the information to our, whether it be like leadership or board or whoever.
So for folks that might not be able to extrapolate from everything that Rochelle has shared with us, what you have here is an incredibly well-rounded attorney who has seen basically every different side of the law, from private practice and representing individual clients to doing GAL work, which has an independent element to it, to now looking at contracts and big entities that engage in day-to-day contract work that impact our entire community. My personal opinion, go ahead, say it, because I do it all day on this radio show, is that having attorneys with that kind of a well-rounded background is absolutely essential as a precondition for judges. It's great when somebody's been a lifelong thus and such, right? Yes. You know that one area of the law, but boy, judges generally don't sit in one sort of courtroom for their whole life. So tell me a little bit about your approach, your thinking about whether it's judicial philosophy, the gaps that you might see on the bench today, why you're the gal for this circuit court opening.
That's probably one of my favorite questions I get. The biggest and most simplest way I say it is I want to bridge those gaps of inequities when people come into the courtroom. And what I mean by that is, because I've now represented children, because I've now seen pro se litigants in court, I've been in the opposite side of things where people are negotiating workers' comp settlements. People don't understand the process. And our system is made to kind of confuse people.
It certainly ain't made to make it easy.
Right.
Maybe not intentionally confusing, but we've certainly got there.
Yes. And so I like one of the things that I feel like I'm really good at is explaining the process and understanding and making people feel like they're part of the process. Make sure that when you come into courtroom, if you came in my courtroom, I want you to remind yourself every time you walk out, like, okay, she was trying to explain that to me. Yes. She wanted me to understand because she wants me to remind myself that this is my hearing. This is my case. For the family members that come in the courtroom, not necessarily be recognized where I speak to you or have to necessarily, I'll speak to families if I can, but speak to you in terms of where I'm making you say something. But you should feel seen when you come into our court system. And Milwaukee County is its own beast, right? It's not like any other county in the state. It's very, very intimidating. And so when we get a judge who understands the process, you should be able to articulate that to everyone who comes in your courtroom. And you should speak in a language and use vocabulary that people can understand. You should make sure before a litigant even walks out that you have a translator that can tell them about what they need and what's the next process and what they need to do.
And resources for those things.
Yes.
We are going to be friends because... What I say to lawyers all the time is stop talking like a lawyer.
Yes.
If you're talking in technical terminology and coded language, and I keep asking you to like explain it better, and you can't do that, yes. You know what I think, Rochelle? You don't understand.
I say that all the time.
Okay, friend.
Okay, so I trained a lot of GALs, I trained a lot of attorneys. Even when I was in private practice, we had a lot of interns that came in. We had a lot of new associates. And I used to say to people all the time, if you can't articulate this case to someone, if they seem confused about the process, it's because you don't understand it. And it's as simple as that.
It really is. And there are so many points where by taking that extra step to explain things to people in a way that is not condescending,
yes,
or disrespectful, that shows some care for where people are, mm-hmm. You can be incredibly impactful in my own language, try to summarize what you're saying, giving some people a feeling of agency.
Yes.
And a process and in a system that makes people feel like they're just getting run over by
completely.
It.
Completely. And you just feel like, you know, you come into court and I mean, I know people who like feel like they had a really good case and they felt like I'm the victim coming into court and I still don't feel heard. I feel like no one even cares I'm here. And that's not good. We don't want that. And I remember even how to explain a little bit deeper about what I mean when I say this is, even if I don't represent you, you're not my client. There's a lot of times where parents came back to me and said to me when I was a GAL, I don't represent them. They'll say, even though you weren't giving me any information that shows you were biased or anything, you gave me hope. Like you told me what I just need to bring to the next hearing because I couldn't read the handwriting of the judges or the commissioner. You know, I will send a letter just to remind both parties of the next court date. even though they get the court dates and they get, you know, get an extra phone call, get an extra letter. Now, obviously, judges can't do all those things.
Yep.
But just that extra little small step that you can take just to show someone that you want them to be part of the process just makes it so much different for everyone coming into court. So I care about people wanting to be part of the process. And so when I talk about that inequities that we want to break down, that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah, it's a process that's supposed to be designed to help people resolve conflicts, you know, at times mete out punishments, adjudge guilt and innocence. Yeah. These are things that I joke with folk all the time. Like, if you're coming into the Milwaukee courthouse and it's not for like a marriage license or some event, this is probably not the best moment in your life.
Usually not, right?
People are scared. It's high stress. Then if
hard to find parking,
I was just going to say, you got to find the darn parking. You don't know where you're going. It's like, oh, that's in the safety building. We have about 40 seconds left.
Okay.
Tell everybody why they're going to vote for Ms. Rochelle Johnson Bent and where they can find your campaign website.
Okay. The reason why people should vote for me is, one, I come with experience, not only with trial, but in litigation, as well as a variety of areas of which we talked about. I'm compassionate about our community. If you look at any or know anything about me, you'll know, like you said, my jobs that I worked in, the community involvement, the state bar, I was a board member. So I stay involved in all things legal, as well as our community. And I know and understand the issues. Plus myself, I'm a mom. So I understand and relate to the issues that a lot of the people who are going into these courtrooms are dealing with, whether it be just caring about their coming back to court in only 2 days. You know, that's not easy for a lot of people.
Give them the website.
So the website is Rochelle 4, like the number, judge MKE dot, Rochelle 4 judge MKE.com. And that's 4, like the number. Rochelle 4.
Back, everybody. We're running a little 70s vibe here on the bottom half of the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Before the break, we were talking with Milwaukee Circuit Court candidate Rochelle Johnson Bent. And I have to personally say it's so refreshing to see someone with the variety of experience that you have, Rochelle. And also, you clearly understand where the gaps are.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. I appreciate you stepping up and raising your hand. Just in case people didn't catch it before we went to break, give it to them one more time. Why they should vote for you, what your website is, so that everybody can take some notes.
And I'm going to give my website first because I said it a little fast earlier. It's Rochelle, R-O-C-H-E-L-L-E. 4, like the number, judge, MKE.com. Rochelle for judge, MKE.com. And to summarize the reasons why I'm running is I'm an experienced litigator and I have trial experience and court experience in various areas. I'm compassionate and understand our community issues. And I am a person who understands the issues that everyone else is dealing with. And I want to bridge those gaps of inequities. So simply stated, I'm a judge who gets it.
I love it. She's a judge who gets it. I hope I can now call you friend.
Yes, please.
And I would love to have you back, Rochelle, if you'll come on back.
I definitely would. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you, Rochelle. And thanks from the entire Civic Media Radio Network. We have just a few minutes here remaining on the Maggie Dawn Show. I have to do some additional promos because there's been so many important things that I want to talk to you all about before we hit this new year. Now, last week on Tuesday and Wednesday, I did two deep days of a whole bunch of history and lead up to where the Supreme Court's shadow docket is today. And it wouldn't be a complete analysis if I did not bookend that with a deep dive on what is called the Chevron Doctrine. Now, I talked about this very briefly when we were all out in Madison hanging out at the Jade Monkey, but it deserves a little bit more of my time, and I hope yours. So on December 19th and 20th, I'm going to talk about the Chevron Doctrine, the four cases that are currently pending before the Supreme Court that would wipe the Chevron Doctrine off of the books, as well as what the heck is going on the Fifth Circuit of the U.S. Court of Appeals. What is the Chevron docket, in case you didn't hear my previous show? It is the standard by which the Supreme Court reviews the determinations of federal agencies, either in rulemaking or enforcement actions. And in a nutshell, it basically goes like this. If the law that Congress passed is silent or not specific as to the particular area of that administrative agency's enforcement or rulemaking, and the enforcement or rulemaking by the agency is reasonable by an objective standard, the Supreme Court will not displace or overrule or override the administrative agency's judgment. Why is that so critical these days? Because there are things called alternative facts. I don't know what they are. Do you? I call them lies. Apparently, scientists and experts don't matter anymore. I think they still do. And if the Chevron doctrine is wiped off the legal map, it will blow wide open what we have relied upon experts for decades to help administrative agencies do, which is rulemake and enforce. I'm talking about chemists. I'm talking about epidemiologists, nuclear physicists, all of that stuff. Forget expertise, forget facts. Now courts just get to decide, I'm not sure on what basis, what administrative agencies' rules and enforcement actions actually will be followed in a court of law. That is a scary, scary, scary proposition. And there are four cases on the Supreme Court's docket that's going to wipe it out. You're not going to want to miss that. I'm going to break it down. I'm going to tell you what the implications are. I'm going to use the Fifth Circuit as an example. That's going to be on December 19th and 20th. That's going to be next week, Tuesday and Wednesday. You will know more about appellate law and administrative law than most lawyers will when you take my Supreme Court shadow docket two shows and these two shows about the Chevron doctrine. Yep, you will know more than most lawyers do. Also, this week, I'm going to talk about this weird phenomenon, and Wisconsin is a case in point. What is up with red states telling blue cities how to do their business? I don't understand it, but it ain't just happening in Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. It's happening all across the United States. The most recent example of this, and it wasn't in a blue city, it was in a university system, is what just happened over these last 2 weeks, where GOP Assembly Leader Robin Voss said, oh, we'll give you more money for, you know, engineering, building, and salaries, UW system, but you have to basically wipe DEI programming off the map. Last I checked, Robin Voss is not a DEI expert, an educational expert, or a professor of anything except alternative facts and, you know, an attack on expertise writ large. So you got to lock that in. That is going to be tomorrow before we get a chance to talk to Al Petrelli of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Last, but certainly not least, you may have seen this really weird opinion piece in the Washington Post. Came out about 3 weeks ago about how the conservative liberal divide is going to end to like the downfall of marriage in the United States because liberal women refuse to deal with guys who subscribe to the MAGA philosophy. There was some really bizarre statements in that op-ed from the WAPO. And while I have to admit it, I've been litmus testing my partners for quite some time on their politics because whew, if we disagree about baseline values like equity and fairness, we're not going to be able to decide who takes out the garbage and who does the dishes. I'm going to cover this dating mismatch and what I found very bizarre in that Washington Post op-ed this coming Wednesday. So much fun stuff coming up here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You're not going to want to miss a lick of it. And of course, on Thursday, we're going to be joined by Civic Media's own Terry Barr for what's local and overlooked in Wisconsin news. Thanks so much for listening. My thanks to my new friend, Rochelle Johnson-Bent, Milwaukee County Circuit Court candidate. I'll be back tomorrow, everybody. Stay warm out there.